This oral history is brought to you with the support of Guttman students and staff and funded by the American Council of Learned Societies and the Mellon Foundation.
Enjoy. Okay, so my name is Keenan, and you're well aware the purpose of this interview is to share your story and to let your voice be heard, for future generation. And this is also, as part of the oral history project collection. So, and I wanted to ask you some questions. I wanted to start off by asking your age. Like, how old are you?
I'm 19 years old.
19 years old. Okay. And what is your occupation?
I work in retail, as well as I'm a CUNY peer mentor here at Guttman.
All right. What's your racial identity?
I'm African American. I identify as Black.
All right. What is your gender identity?
My gender identity is female.
Okay. What is your sexual orientation?
I'm heterosexual.
Okay. And I will also like to ask, this is just part of the introduction. These are the questions as the introduction. And lastly, where are you from? Where are you from?
Born and raised in New York City, Queens.
Okay. So tell me the long story of how you or your family ended up in New York City.
From what I know, my grandmother was also born and raised in Queens. Her mother is from Puerto Rico. Her mother came here to New York, and they wound up here in New York. She did, and then my grandmother was born. And long story short, I was born from my mom, and yeah, so.
So you were born in the United States, right?
Born and raised.
Oh, okay. What about your family? Your family was born, they weren't born here, right?
Well, my grandmother, I don't really know the backstory behind where my grandmother, like how she wound up here, but I know that for the most part, everybody was raised in New York, with the exception of my great grandmother.
Oh, okay, cool. So, anything else you would like to add onto that?
Living in New York, it has taught me a lot of things, and yeah.
Oh, okay. So I would like to now ask you questions regarding COVID-19. So the first thing I would like to ask you is, how has coronavirus changed your life?
That is a really interesting question. Okay. So COVID, I feel like it pretty much was, it's a symbol of the beginning, the ending of a beginning. For me, at least, for starting off college, starting off a new path in life, it was ended, or it was modified through COVID, because, everything shut down, and things that I was becoming used to, I had to switch. So, for instance, going to school, going to Guttman, getting accustomed to the environment, that was changed, and now it was put back being in school virtually. So it was a very interesting experience.
Okay. Yeah. Everything transitioned from doing things physically to doing things remotely, So yeah.
Yeah.
So now I would like to ask, what is it like to be at home so often?
It is like a movie. Not even like a movie. It's kind of ordinary sometimes, but then other times it's like, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in the house. What it's like actually it's like a DIY project, a do-it-yourself project. You know, you're doing stuff that, you know, going to school, doing homework, but in a way, you're kind of figuring out how to adjust, how to learn without seeing the professor. And in a way, such an ordinary thing that we, you know, think is normal is a part of life. We now have to think about it in terms of, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about that? So it's a roller coaster, actually. It's a roller coaster.
Okay. So I also want to ask, you know, how did this impact you mentally or emotionally?
It was sure impactful.
It was very
impactful. It was honestly, you know, one of those things where, and especially with everything going on in like politics in society, you know, and what you see, it's kind of, it can be very emotionally draining sometimes. Well, a lot of times. And, you know, after you're settled and you're like, oh, hey, I'm home or whatever, and you see what's going on in the news, and you have time to really sit and think about it, and what you kind of feel helpless in a terms, you know? So emotionally and mentally, it was very draining. Very draining. But it was another thing, it was very insightful, because you, after all of that draining you've gone through, you know, and you probably still have moments where you go through it, you have to think about what's next. What do you want to do with your life? Because the COVID is happening, but life is happening. So in a way, your mental state has to get stronger, and you have to overcome. So that's how it's been mentally.
Okay. Interesting. So how did this impact you socially?
Socially? You know, Gutman, is this your first year at Gutman, or is it your second year?
No, I'm a continuing student.
Continuing student. Okay. So, you know, here at Gutman, you go through Summer Bridge. So Summer Bridge, you meet everyone, you kind of develop a friend, you develop friends, you know, you have somewhat of a social life. And from that to go virtually, your friendships start dwindling. So sometimes you can feel alone, you know, and isolated. For me, I'm the only child. So it's like, you know, that social life is kind of gives you some type of outlet, you know, but yeah, socially, I felt a little disconnected. I felt disconnected socially.
Okay. And I also would like to ask, how did, you know, COVID-19, how did this impact your family?
It impacted my family in the sense of, okay, so my mom, she's a counselor, and she helps people with disabilities, and she, like, that's her job. So she would be considered an essential worker, you know, in a way, because she had to go right back, regardless of the COVID, regardless of, because there were people that still needed to be tended to, you know, who was going to help them. So she had to go back, and it was kind of like scary, because you got to go back, and like, it was a scary experience, but she loves her job so much. So she went and she did it, you know. My grandmother, she had to go back also, because she works in that realm. So she also had to go back, but she had just come out of surgery. It was just a lot. So, you know, it was kind of scary, because, you know, you want to be around your family, you want to encounter your family, but you don't want to you know, you don't want to give it to them, or, you know, that's the scary part. You know, you have to, you still have to go, say, like, go to get groceries or go out, but you still want to be with your family. So it impacted my family in the sense of you had to be a little bit more cautious. Yeah,
especially, I understand, you know, especially with the social distancing and being 6 feet away. Yeah, it is. It's pretty challenging.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I would like to ask, you know, are people in your household working, or what's the follow up?
So everyone is working, including me, everybody. Because again, they're like essential workers, and they have to, like, no, that's the fortunate part. Nobody lost their job. Thank God, you know, don't want to jinx it or anything, but nobody lost their job or anything. So everybody's fine now.
So you're saying that everybody, you know, your family, they're working outdoors, right?
Yeah, they're working. Yeah, they don't work remote.
Oh, they don't work indoors?
No.
Oh, okay. So it says, what have you learned about yourself and your family since the beginning of this crisis that occurred in 2020?
Wow. I learned the urgency I have for myself to really, you know, like, after college, you want to pursue your career. And I think I have such an urgency for that. I realized, you know, I feel like for me, honestly, and I think Gutman has a good part, a good chunk of why I'm like this now. Like, learning new things and how much there's so much possibility in the world, you know, even when it's dim. That I really, really realized that, you know, there's so much possibility. Even when you're in these four walls, I can't help but to think about the future and traveling. And so what I've learned about myself is, yeah, that is still possible. I also learned that I'm a procrastinator.
Wow, okay.
I'm a crazy procrastinator. I think I knew that, but I think it's become more apparent. Like, you know, and I think really deep into things. So, like, sometimes it's like, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of, and also that there's still room to self-improve. So that those are one of the things I watch. After this interview, I'm probably going to think of more things. Like, oh, I learned this, I learned that. But right now, I've learned that, and the importance of family, you know. You that's all you have. But more specifically, self-improvement and, you know, things about myself, things that I've learned about myself that I want to be better and what I want to change. So, yeah. And to go back to, yeah, that's what I learned.
Okay, well said. So I also want to ask, you know, what has been the difficult part of this pandemic for you? What are the challenges did you experience?
Challenges. Okay. So, adjusting. So like I said, you know, even though, like, before, oh my gosh, I was a mess during the beginnings of quarantine. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, a very emotional, very all over the place. And, you know, the reason why, because I think it's the sense of losing control, you know, and losing and feeling like, okay, I have no control over stuff. It's a wreck. It's havoc. People are dying. This is going on. Like, I was all over the place. And with school, my difficulty was I just felt so out of the loop, and I just winded up. Well, now I'm like back a little bit. I'm like, sometimes I kind of get disconnected and then I get back disconnected. So that's like another thing, the difficulty with the quarantine and the pandemic. But, you know, losing connection, feeling disconnected in school, I was like, and I had fine theory during this time. So during the beginning of the quarantine, I was like, you know what? I'm over this. You know, this this, in what is the point, you know? So that's where I felt really disconnected.
You know, my little advice to you is to never give up, you know, always be kind of, you know, consistent. You have to be consistent, you know?
Yeah, that is true. You know, yeah, that's really true.
You can never give up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just, you know, always gotta, you know, just reach your goal. You gotta have a goal in life and, you know, try to reach your goal.
Yeah, persevere. That's true.
Yep. Yeah, you gotta, like they say, pursue your goal.
Yes, you know, and one of the people that helped me during that, like, realize that and also not to be so, because I was like, oh my gosh, there's this end of the world. Like, not the end of the world, but it was pretty depressing at that point for me. And really confusing. It was a confusing time, you know. You have police brutality going on. This has been going on, but you know, when you're in quarantine and you see all these things on Instagram and social media, and you're looking at the news and you're seeing the videos and you're seeing the actual footage, it in a way, like, you're kind of desensitized, but then because you feel that's another part of the disconnection part that I felt, you know. And also, but it was also depressing at the same time, you know. But one of the people that helped me realize that to persevere and to push myself and not to give up was Dr. Feinseri. You know, he's like, I remember I like literally just, I think I just stopped being active in class or whatever, virtual learning. And I just was like, you know what? I just feel like low a little. I just feel low. You know, and I kind of it was a very emotional time, but Dr. Feinseri, he was saying, like, basically, yeah, everything is messed. Like, he would listen, and, you know, to my frustrations, how I was confused and, you know, how I felt disconnected. He basically was like, don't give up, you know. That was just, like, it's okay to feel how you feel, and you're not you shouldn't feel like you're wrong for feeling how you feel, but also don't give up, because there's so much future, there's so much promise, you know. And yeah, there's so much promise in your, like, future, basically. Not, those are not the exact words, but that was, you know, what I got from that. And, you know, to feel how you feel, but there's resources to learn more, to improve, you know. And but don't ever feel like you're alone, you know. And that, I really got that from Dr. Feinseri. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's, yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. Yeah, you're not alone, you know. And as he said, you know, never give up. You always got to be persistent. You know, you got to work hard at it, you know, to achieve your goal, all that. So, yeah. And I would also want to ask, you know, has there been anything positive to come out of this pandemic for you?
Well, I think so. Aside from all the crazy DIY projects I did at home, like, legit. Like, you know, there's been so many times, even though it's, you know, yes, we have a pandemic going on, and going to the store was really hectic because there was always lines or something of the sort. But, like, a positive, like, I would always go to, like, Target sometimes to buy, like, you know, essentials or whatever, but also to get, like, things to keep me busy. And one of the positive impacts from that was, you know, I think I have gotten a lot of books to read, you know, okay, from the book section. Aside from spending money, but I've saved a lot of money, you know, because you can't go out, there's nothing to do, you know, there's no, except for online shopping. That is one bad thing.
Okay,
you know? But I've saved a lot of money. I got, I think, you know, aside from getting disconnected from school, it kind of reconnected myself into school, you know, because with Gutman, despite it's a lot of communicate, it's hard. Sometimes there's a hardship communicating in Gutman when you got to email somebody and you're like,
yeah,
you know, that's annoying. But, you know, I definitely feel like I've received a lot of communication that helped towards my, you know, transferring. I was able to do this really amazing class by Batiste, a professor at Gutman, called Decolonization, and I've learned a lot. And I learned a lot. Hey, there's so many positives too. Like, out of the emotionally draining parts of the quarantine, I did have a lot of great things that happened. You know, besides Target, you know, DIY projects and all that craziness. I'm a filmmaker and.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker and.
Filmmaker, so you like to act?
No, I like to make films. I like to write. I like to write. Direct the films, learn about the film. I just love.
That's great, you know, because I like that too. I like to write stories, and I used to make skits. I used to kind of act.
Wow.
Yeah, I used to, but. You know, as you grow older, you kind of get tired of it, and you know, you just want to do other things that we are, you know, like that I'm passionate about, that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I still, even to this day, I do like to write stories. I like to write, you know, like comedy. I used to do comedy skits. And I used to show them to my my parents, and they said they were impressed with my acting skills.
Okay.
Yeah, and I do. I you know, even right now, I really want to go back to acting again. I really do. And I also like planning on like writing stories. I always like to share my writings, and I like to put a lot of emotion to it. You know, I don't like to make it bland. I don't want to make a bland writing. I want to put emotions in it. You know. Like as if see, my thing is this: when I'm writing a story or writing a film, or you know, is what's really important is you got to make sure you connect with the reader, as if the reader is like part of that story. You know, like I have a connection. You know, especially when I watch a movie and I like a certain character, it's like because I understand that character, I understand what he's going through, and it's like you can relate. You know.
I agree.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, you know, and it's interesting that you like to, you know, write films.
Thank you. I'm a student of film. I'm a filmmaker, you know.
No wonder it's called Gutman Superstar, right? Hey, I mean, congratulations, you know. Congratulations. Just, you know, do what you're passionate about, you know.
Thank you. I agree. Same for you, you know.
Even though I do this for fun, My dad has told me, you know, you should definitely be an actor and all, and you know, and the thing is that, yeah, but I don't really want to be an actor. I just do this for fun. I just do skits for fun. And then he said, yeah, but don't we all do things for fun? And eventually we just want to do this, like, then eventually, you know, we want to, like, be part of a movie or, you know, be an actor. And then, you know, that it changes. We do this at first, we do this for fun, and then it just starts to change. Then we start being in movies. We start acting in movies and stuff, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, it's okay if you do it for fun, but you know, definitely don't second guess it. That's one thing. Don't ever second guess.
Yeah.
Like, cause if, honestly, that's the beauty of film, you know. There's so many different genres and different realms.
Oh yeah, there. Yeah, totally, so,
yeah. But
I like to, you know, what kind of genre? Like, what are you into? What type of genre are you into?
Well, so for me, I pretty much the films I've done narrative films, so that focused like a coming of age type of film. I've done two documentaries. So pretty much, but what I'm passionate about is, I guess you can say, I don't want to say dramas, but I like writing dramas, and I'm more so right now. The project that I'm working on is a series,
Wow.
Drama. So that's what I'm
but yeah, it's amazing, really amazing to hear all that. You like to do drama because I too like to do drama.
That's good. You know, drama.
I like to also do comedy. As I said before, you know, I like to do comedy, I like to do drama, you know, and you know, I also interested in doing other genres as well. But it's really interesting that, you know, that you like to do drama.
Yeah, pretty much. But I don't like to limit myself because, again, like, I feel like for me as a filmmaker, there's so much I don't know, but there's so much I like to learn. Yeah. But I don't want to limit myself. I just like to make what my heart or what I'm interested in or what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But to answer your – but that is really great, you know, like comedy, drama –
You know,
and I know it may, like, you know, you're saying it's, you're like, you know, it's a hobby or whatever, but
it really is. Even to this day, it's still a hobby. It's like, I'm really, really going, like, I actually want to do my own skits again. Like, I want to go back to doing, because that when I was young, I used to do it, but, you know, and I kind of stopped because I had other things going on. But then now I'm thinking about, because now ever since you brought it up with the whole acting and the filmmaking, I'm like, oh, I definitely want to go back. Definitely.
Do it. You know, if you ever want to really like,
because I could literally see myself like just being an actor, you know, and practicing my acting skills. So do you like acting? Do you like to, you know, act?
I'm open to it, but for me, I love writing. I love really directing, creating the story. I love, even though it's really hectic, I just, that's what I'm passionate about. And acting, from what I see and how I direct sometimes, like the one narrative film I did, we had an actor and and they had to, like, we had them doing so many different things and it was just, I pretty much probably wouldn't do it. Like, I don't know. Maybe one day, but to hone in on your question, the positive impact for me for film and concerning film, one of the things that happened prior to COVID, I was actually beginning production for a film that I was in the production. I didn't create the film, but I was a part of the production of it.
So you wanted to, be a producer?
No. Well, there for film, there's so many different realms you can do. You can be a screenwriter, you can be a director, you can be a part of, you can be a producer, you can be an editor. So let me put it in more in context. I'm a part of a film program called DCTV. DCTV stands for Downtown Television Community Center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So okay. I'm gonna send an email just in case you ever want to check it out. If you wanna,
yeah, sure, I'll definitely check it out. Definitely, yeah.
You know, the programs are free, you know, and it's open for all ages, but I think pretty much the teens to adults, young adults. But so DCTV, I'm a part of the Young Women in Cinema. Well, in that, before COVID, I was a part of the Young Women in Cinema. And what the Young Women in Cinema is, it's a program where you learn more about film, you hone your skills, and you eventually have to create a project. And this project goes on to be screened at our event, and then it goes on to film festivals. So okay. During that time, I was a part of the production because, you know, we got picked to be like, oh, hey, and, you know, our projects were put out and whoever's project was to be put in production, that was to be put in production. So mine wasn't chosen, but I was a part of an amazing film called Grow Me. And what her idea was, it was to talk about loving your natural hair and loving your identity as a Black woman. This goes on. We were about to be in production. We already casted people. We already was in the motion, right? So all of the production just halt, like just stopped, you know? And so that happened. So then we had to move everything to be remote. And Romy winded up not being able to be produced, but it's still amazing. Like, it still can be produced, but it the production of it halted, and we eventually had to shift our film into something else. So the film classes now began into different, because everybody, you know, due to COVID, some people didn't return and just things of that nature. But I stayed, I did the program, and I winded up being a part of an amazing group for the summer. And we created a film called The Cost of Freedom. And The Cost of Freedom is a documentary that talks about the cash bail system and how it imprisons people who are, you know, a middle class, low class, if you can't afford it.
Ah, okay.
So you
said it's a documentary?
Mm-hmm. Short film documentary. Mm-hmm.
Oh, documentary. Okay. So it's based on, you know, what's happening in the real world, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. And okay. You know, it's happening in different states such as New York, Florida, Jersey. And so we created that film, and it was through animation. We can't interview people right now or whatever. So we gathered information from articles, just really doing a deep dive, similar to what you're doing now, you know, in like going through interviews, going through archives.
Yes, yes.
So gathering evidence and information. So for that documentary, we did animation. We have this amazing person named Jacob create the animation, and he did the narration, and it was just amazing. Very, very long, very, very excruciating work, you know, long hours on Zoom.
Yes, yes.
Long hours on Zoom, stress, but it created something so beautiful. And as a result of that learning experience and creating that film, we submitted it to film festivals. Well, DCTV submitted it to film festivals, and it won a film festival, the Justice Aid Film Festival, and it won the grand prize. So that was a positive impact that COVID had. You know,
cool.
Even though production ended, I was a part of another great documentary, and we got to do this cool film festival called Justice Aid, and really learn about other films. But that was a cool aspect. Another great aspect, like I said, Batiste's decolonization class, he's an amazing, and I learned a lot. Just really like the positive impact about COVID, you know, because you're in the house by yourself, you have no other choice but to look at yourself. And because when you go outside, you know, before COVID, I'm pretty sure everybody had their like, okay, I'm going to school, I'm going to work, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But COVID forces you to stand still and
reflect,
you know. So for me, you know, of course I kept myself after, you know, my little emotional, not little, but, you know, after going through emotional roller coasters. You know, you kind of, for, you know, you have to really realize, okay, hey, I want to do this. Hey, life goes on. Hey, let me, instead of just giving up, you know, and tendency to do, you persevere. So that was the positive impact for me. And also, you know, getting more involved in Gutman. I became a peer mentor. I'm a part of SGA. So really getting more involved and trying to get more connected.
All right. So I also want to move on to the BLM protesting. I want to ask you questions about that. So explain to me why you think these anti-racist protests erupted.
Because these anti-racists, wow. Okay. So BLM started because, for one, there's many Black lives that are passing right now, like that are being brutally murdered, and also being imprisoned, being oppressed. That's why BLM started, you know. Not even just BLM. That is the whole, and just I don't even want to focus it just on being, well, because racism is a part of oppression. So but I will say, like, aside from BLM, this has been an ongoing push for change, you know?
Yeah.
Because of the oppression, because of slavery and just going on to what we're going through now, segregation, yeah. all of these things are components of what we have today because of this structured, this system where it's designed to oppress and to
put certain people
in a higher power than others because of race, because of these ideas and concepts. That's why we have what we have going on right now. That's why police brutality, because of these stereotypes that are perpetuated in the mind that cause people to have this perception of a certain group, be more specific, Black people, people of color, and that's why we have what's going on right now.
Okay, okay. So why do you think NYC became an epic center of the protests?
Wow, okay. So why NYC became the epicenter? I think, you know, New York City has so many different cases. Of course, NYPD, you know, I have so many different, let me condense it. But NYPD, very large, right?
Yes.
There has been so many cases of police brutality, of injustices, you know, and some that haven't come to light, some that have come to light. And it's really an uproar, because after seeing what's going on with the whole, because first George Floyd, you know.
Oh, yes. Funny, because I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. You know, George Floyd, an unfortunate death happened.
Yes.
Know? So in the midst of all of that, all of that emotion, seeing what happened there, we still have these deaths, Eric Garner, right?
Yeah.
We still have that right there, you know, so it's not unfamiliar. So why there was such an uproar, because of this, like, hey, like all this, excuse my language, all this bullshit that's happening. And no, there's no repercussions, or there's bare minimum repercussions. So that's why all these protests have been going on, you know. And after being in quarantine, after, you kind of feel helpless, you kind of feel like, what the hell is the point of all of this, you know?
Yeah, so, I know.
You know, you have people that protest that are like, hey, I'm not going to take this. And, you know, there's so much power in us people that, you know, these governments and this system and NYPD, it's only powerful because people make it powerful. And also, of course, because of the systems that have been put on and put in place long before us, right? Yeah. But protesting is so powerful, and especially in New York City, because it's a city that has so many different backgrounds, so many different cultures. And if we all protest, there's eventually going to be a change, you know? Because if the people, and especially with this whole pandemic, like, that's dangerous. So if we're, and not saying, you know, you should put your life in jeopardy, but when there's a cause and there is something that's really something serious going on, that's been going on for years, you, that's why. So yeah, that's my answer.
Okay. Okay. So I would like to ask, do you have any stories you are willing to share about the encounters you have had with racism or the police?
Ooh, I keep like, oh my gosh. Wow. Well, you know, what's funny. And I always tell, like, whenever, like, I would be on the phone with Dr. Feinter, I'd be like, this is so confusing, because a part of me feels like, oh my gosh, you know, this, all of this is going on. Of course, as a Black woman, as a Black person, as a person in general, you feel like, damn, like, this person had to lose their life because of this unfortunate situation, because of these stereotypes, because of all of this stuff that is designed to just have us segregated in a way. And for me, but I've never encountered police brutality in a way. Like, I've never encountered in that severity. I've never encountered that, you know. Not something I can remember right now, but you know, so in a way I was like, oh my God, I feel like I don't know how to feel, right? But in a way, and the frustration, the anger that kicks in is, experience that I've had with racism or microaggression, you know, that you deal with at work. One recent one, and I mean, it's something people will consider like, oh, it's so small, it's just hair, it's just this, but it's a part of your identity. It's a part of my culture. It's a part of who I am. I was at work, and my supervisor, and I wear protective styles to protect your hair or whatever. And my supervisor, I was wearing not dreadlocks, they're called locks. I was wearing locks, faux locks. And she was like, she looked at me and, you know, she, I don't want to like, but it is conducive towards the situation. She was a white woman. She was somebody other than my race, you know? So okay. Probably, you know, you can't identify, I guess, whatever. But Yeah. She said, she looked at me and she was like, you are so beautiful. You are so beautiful. Why do you want to put that in? Why do you have that in your hair? You're too beautiful for it. Like the sentiments of you're too beautiful for this hairstyle, right?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, in a regular person's mind, they're like, okay. And I can understand why, because, you know, a part of me is like, you know, maybe yeah. He just thinks it's a hairstyle. Maybe, you know, that's not, you know. But she further goes and she says, you know, mind you, my hair is in perfect condition. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't have any, because, you know, like, when people look at locks, they'll probably be like, oh, it probably smells, or my locks, her locks, like that's what goes on in people's minds. She's like, can I wash it? Yeah. She proceeds to touch it, right? She's like, can I wash it? How much, is it heavy on your head? Can I wash it? And, you know, it was so uncomfortable because you don't, for me at least, I have this, like, I'm like, okay, they already think I'm going to come a certain way, you know, be aggressive. They already think I'm going to be like that. That's what, sometimes that's in your mind, you know, hence why there's code switching and why people of color, people from a certain background code switch in order to be accepted in society. But I was already like, I want to tell this lady to stop touching my hair. I want to question this lady. Why am I too beautiful to not wear faux locks? Why are you saying that? Why are you alluding that my hair is dirty? Why are you alluding all of these? Why are you making these allusions? Like, why are you making not allusions? Why are you making all these? So, but I didn't, because in a way, and you know, I wanted to say something because I was like, all of the stories, all of the past occasions where I have not said anything, I just wanted, like, but again, I'm at work, supervisor can't, right? But it's stuck with me because I'm so upset. And I'm like, is this because, like, why, like, how dare you, you know? And the question is, how is that racist, right? How is that racist? How is that even some type of racism? So I think for me, I take it as if I was a different, like, why, like, it, I think what was so bothering to me was her assumptions of people that have that type of hair color, that hair texture, you know, that bothered me. And it struck a chord because there's so many other people that look like me that have that, oh, you're, and that is another reason why people get discriminated against, you know, black men get discriminated against. Just something simple as that, you know? But that, you know, I guess, what is this? So for me, that was what I went through. And you know, just being a black person, there will always be microaggressions. There will always be that point where you're like hot, you know?
Yeah.
But that's my experience with race and racism and things of that nature.
Okay. You know, and then I would also like to ask, you know, were you active in the protest at all in a digital or in person way over the last 6 months? If so, how and why did you decide to get involved?
So, for me, I was scared to do people, like, that's why I say, if you protest, you're very bold, very courageous, because I was scared to be honest, because I didn't want to catch COVID again. I don't want to give it to my mom.
Yeah.
You know, but, and for a minute, I kind of just, when all of that protesting happened, I literally just felt, I kind of got disconnected. And I was like, I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know what to say. Because you see it on Instagram, you see all of these different accounts of, oh, you know, this is happening, that's happening, be aware of this. And you want to make sure what you're looking at is real. And what, like, of course we know the video, that is real. That's real, you know?
Yeah.
Reality is real. But what you're seeing on social media, it gets blinds you, blurred, because it's like, okay, should I support this? Should I support that? Should I support that? So, you know, I kind of was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't, you know, and again, you're feeling desensitized at the same time. You're like, I don't know how to feel, because I was never put in a predicament where it was so like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, what I did was I pretty much, whenever information I could get out there, I used after feeling like that, whatever information I can use, or, you know, whatever information I learned myself, I was looking at articles, having conversations with Dr. Fine, like, you know, just, and also talking to her, Monica, she's another, Jeanette Gutman, definitely. So after having those conversations, after learning more, I pretty much, whatever I can, like, information I could put out there, and whatever I can do, that's what I did. So I used social media as a platform, and definitely spreading information, spreading awareness on what was going on, and whatever I felt was just and right. So yeah. And okay. Also, you know, the cash bail system, that documentary, of course, like, you know, after you did your research, you're like, your due diligence, and you're like, hey, obviously it's affecting people of color.
Yeah.
People that are just people that can't afford the cash, like, not saying all black people, or just saying, like, people that, black people, people of color, and people that the middle class, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I definitely push forward, like, hey, this should go here, that should go, like, not saying I was the only one, because all of my group member, my team, we all were on the same page. So I think, but that was also another way where I was like, okay, this is serious, this is what's going on. So yeah.
Okay. So now what was the responses? How did, let's say, like, the cops, or what do you think about the local or national government respond to protesting that began in May 2020?
Can you repeat that question one more time?
It says here, so I asked, you know, what do you think about the cops' response to protesting, as well as, you know, local and national government's response to the protest that began in May 2020? What do you think about that?
So, I don't want to be more specific, May 2020, because I'm trying to think about, well, like, what you're saying, but I want to say in general, their responses, like, you have some, like, and that's the frustrating part, you know, I don't want to just say as a, like, yeah, as a black person, like, when you're looking at social media or people on platforms who are sometimes, even people of color that say it, because come on now. But when you see people that say, hey, police brutality is not real, and you have to look at all the other intricacies of it, you know, it gets frustrating. That's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
And I have, like, people that have talked about their own accounts with law enforcement, and how basically it's kind of a thing where it's like, they completely disregard it. Like, you know, like, oh,
yeah,
you like, come on, he was obviously a thug, and this and that and the third. And they know that they're not going to get, they know that there's no repercussions. So yeah, it's like, whatever. My response to that specifically is, that is a reflection of how society has put people of power, people that are supposedly supposed to have power, that is what you get, you know. That is the production of that, you know. And it's frustrating, because how can you not see that that's wrong, you know? And I try to wrap my brain around it, and sometimes it gets confusing because it's like, okay, I know that it's wrong. Many people know that it's wrong, but you have this specific reason why it's not right. So people, the common theme will be, these people risk their lives every day, right? You risk your life every day. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, you risk your life every day, same here. But you do it as an occupation, and you feel like people don't respect you because of the backlash of police, of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at it as, okay, you have that reasoning, but why though? Why do people not like police? It can't just be, oh, let me just wake up one day and say, I don't like police. There are some people that feel like, okay, I'm just going to follow things. But there are also people that have experiences. Like I, one time, I remember, and this is not even particularly because she probably was, we're black, but I remember my mom used to get stopped a lot by when she used to pick me up from school. And it could be a plethora of things. Oh, you parked wrong, whatever, you know. And not, she didn't get stopped multiple times, but there was like two times she got stopped. And one time, you know, she called my dad. I think it was because of something. And she was like, I called my dad because I think I called him for some weird reason. And he was trying to explain something to the cop. And he's like, why do you have that camera in my face? Why do you have that camera in my face? And in his mind, I'm probably thinking, okay, maybe, you know, you're uncomfortable. Of course, if somebody puts a camera, but I am a kid. I'm like, here's the camera, you know, and now, you know, when you see everything that's going on, I think about it, and I'm like, you know, that could have went all types of wrong, you know, but it's scary because it's like, what do you think is going to happen? And, you know, a part of me thinks if I wasn't black, what would it be like if I had a camera, whatever. And then there was another situation where a lady, she was a woman cop. And this stuck with me because, you know, I used to think like, if I ever see her again, I'm not going to do anything to her, but I know I'm just not going to like her. Like, I know I'm going to know when I see you that you're not a good person, because she stopped my mother. And, you know, there's different things. Like, you know when somebody's being rude. And being rude is objective. It's not always an objective thing. Somebody, you can say something and somebody's like, oh, you're being rude. It's a subjective thing. But she, my mom, I guess, something with her chin, something. But she was stopped and she was just being rude. Like, she was like, oh, something about the license plate. But it was just, I remember that feeling like, she didn't have to do all of that. Like, you didn't have to do that. Because my mom wasn't being rude to her. My mom was, you know, you're the police officer. You have to follow the precautions. But yeah. I say this to say, police officers, I understand you risk your life. I understand, you know, at any moment, somebody, say like you have to stop somebody and you don't know what is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I do know that those people are feeling the same exact sentiments, you know, and you police officers, they take it as, or some police officers, when you know that and you know, okay, you have a gun, you have this, you have certain things, you know, and you're taught the procedure, but you still disregard it and you still go the extra mile, and we still have these cases. You wonder why people don't like you. You wonder why. And it's not saying you should have that mindset towards every police officer. Like, should I take those two bad encounters or those two uncomfortable encounters with police officers as like, oh, I hate police officers? No, you know. But it shouldn't be like, oh, disregarded, you know. They should think like, hey, we should change things. There are some police officers that, and I'm not all police officers are like that, you know, but I'm not going to say that sentiment of, oh, there's just a few bad apples. No, that is not that sentiment. There's just a system that has been placed where there's no repercussions for these bad apples, you know? So their response to it is just, sometimes it just gets like, do you not understand? Like, you have a job, you're here to protect. Why are you not? Why does it seem like there's so many senseless killings if you're not protecting? You know, I had a friend. She was telling me her experience with the law, like basically, you know, because she's into that like field or whatever. And she was saying they're taught to aim to kill. That's what they're taught. They're not aimed. They're not taught to shoot a leg. They're taught to kill.
Yeah.
And that's scary. You know, I understand like you got to protect yourself. But if you know, like, let's look at like a situation like Eric Garner or George Floyd. Was those necessary situations? No. You know, so it's like, it's such a, you know, when they have that reasoning of, oh, well, I'm a police officer. And it's like, no, that's not the right reason. And then you have former president, safe to say, former president such as Trump, who pushed this like, oh, people are rioting and people are doing this, people are doing that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any better, you know?
No.
You have people that just come and like, oh, you see what President Trump said? Because, and people think, oh, he's a part of the government. He knows all of this. Oh, and it's a higher power. No, it's not.
Yeah.
So okay. I think what they say is their responses are divisive. Like a lot of the messages that are spewed out, even the actions that are shown, are very divisive. So that's my response to that. You know, that long-winded sentence, that's my response.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I just want to move on to questions about 2021. You know, so I want to ask, you know, what is your reaction to the invasion of the U.S. Capitol by the Trump supporters on January 6, 2021?
That's great.
What do you think? What do you think led to these people to attempt to violently overthrow the government?
Violently overthrow the government. I think that's crazy you say that, because I was gonna bring that up in my answer before.
Okay.
You know, the Capitol, first of all, that was so crazy because I saw the video of the police officer, the security guard, I think. He was trying to like keep them from coming upstairs, but every time he went up the stairs, they went up the stairs. And it kind of reminded me of This Is America. The music video, like he's running from these, like,
yeah.
But I feel like what led to it is just people feeling like it's a crazy, like when I look at Trump's people that are Trump supporters or just supporters of like some, so, like certain, I don't want to say it, but certain supporters of a direction that is a divisive supporter, like divisive supporters. That's what I'm going to label them, divisive supporters. I think of like this sense of entitlement. That's why, you know, this entitlement, like this cannot happen, you know? And I'm gonna like, it's a difference of when you protest because people are dying and injustices are going on and actual oppression versus people that feel a certain way because of a situation, right? That is not severely oppressive. That is not unjust, you know? Yeah. And I haven't looked so much into the Capitol Hill. Like for me, anybody, like even Feinstein could say, like, I'm very much so, I say I'm not a political person. I say, like, I'm not saying I'm political. Like that means you have to be political, because you really don't.
You
really don't, but you just have to be aware of what's going on in society. But I say, like, for me, with the whole Black Lives Matter, all of that, that was a lot. Like, I was like, oh my gosh. This is so much, like there's so much you have to look into with all of this, you know, you see what's going on, but there's so much backstory. But yeah. That's besides the point. Capitol Hill, from my knowledge, it was just basically crazy Trump supporters.
Okay.
These, like, for that situation, why there was so much violence, because of entitlement and because, oh, this should be that way. And if it's not this way, then all hell is going to break loose. You know, it's that ridiculous entitlement that's why that happened. Why? Okay. It's crazy. And, you know, to further reflect on that, you know, it's crazy how far they got, you know,
yeah,
look at people.
Yeah.
You got armies out there for people that are protesting for Black Lives Matter. Like, you got armies out there ready to rip the tear gas off and, you know, do all of this violence towards protesters, right?
Yeah.
But did you see, like, there was a photo of them just sitting on desks taking photos, right? Of themselves. Like, not taking photos of themselves, like these photos. And no, actually, yeah, taking selfies with police officers. Like, it was like a whole, like, it was a walk through the White House or something, you know? Do you see the difference? Like, they're protesters that couldn't do that. Like, okay, you want to bring up, oh, well, there was a whole, I think there was a Wendy's set on fire. There was something set on fire. There was looting. That just didn't happen without No. There was repercussions for that. There were people that were arrested. There were people that were still repercussions, you know? And I'm not saying that right now there aren't repercussions, because obviously I see, like, there was one of them that was, two, a couple of them that were put in jail or something of the sort. But what I'm saying is those two different accounts of protesters that are protesting because they're mad and protesters that are hurt, that are going through something, that are tired of it, they got documents. Like, they you know, imagine being one of those rioters, and going in there and looking at documents, having that ability to go invade some type of privacy. You know what I'm saying? Versus, like, there's a different type of power that's there, you know, a different type of inclusion that isn't there. So the root of that is because of that entitlement. They feel entitled. They feel like it should go this way. It should be how it, like, forget all this protesting and stuff. Make sure them votes is right for that.
Yeah.
Forget all that. And when that doesn't happen, when that change starts, when Biden is in office, when Kamala Harris is in office, that system that y'all like so much is no longer in your favor, and Donald Trump is not here to save nobody, is not here to stop anything.
Yeah.
That's when that entitlement gets mad, and that enraged entitlement gets stronger, and they flex their power. Not power, but that sort of power that they have.
Cool. I want to ask you, you know, what do you think about the impeachment trial of former President Trump?
I don't think it's going to happen. I haven't kept up with it, but I don't think, it's going on right now, but, like, I don't think he's going to get impeached. I don't think so. I don't know much about it. Like, right now, I haven't kept up with it.
Mm-hmm.
I see it on Twitter. It's live right now on Twitter.
But,
man, listen, that right there, if he does get impeached, you know, I know that he can't go in office if he gets impeached.
Yeah.
He can't. So that takes away from his power.
But yeah.
I'm looking at it like, if he doesn't get impeached, he's probably going to run for something. I don't know.
Yeah.
If he feels the need to, but we'll see what happens. That's all I'm going to say towards that.
Okay. So, yeah, now I have 5 additional questions that I came up with that I would like to ask you if you would like to answer them.
Yeah. Oh, and to go on to that question too, like, if you have to look at it, like, if Donald Trump gets impeached, right?
Mm-hmm.
We still have Mike Pence. We still have that. We still have other, and that's why it can't just change. It has to change with people, but it also has to, like, we as ourselves, we have to, like, really push for that change, you know, that reform in government and in systems that needs to, like, for instance, right, Mike Pence, or just any other figure that gets put.
Yeah.
That doesn't say, and even then, even if he gets out of office or he gets impeached, that's like, okay, Trump, you're out. There's still going to be people that support him. There are still going to be, you know, And also, there's other stuff that needs to be honed in on, too, about him. Like, cases of, I think, sexual of assault, taxes, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some other things. Like, I don't know if those other things were talked about, you know? Because if he gets in, like, I don't know, like, does that even include an impeachment? Like, in his impeachment? No, I think it's just about really the assault with the Capitol Hill, just stuff like that, you know? And also, I think other things, like, concerning him with the killing of, or not even the killing, was it just an assassination? Something. But all of that needs to be addressed, too, you know?
Yeah.
And one man's impeachment doesn't mean that there another person can come in after 2 years and do the same thing. It's just, it really takes us to really show, like, this is what needs to be reformed. This is what needs to be decolonized. So, yeah. But on to your five questions.
Yeah. So, you know, I would like to ask, why did the looting happen? Why did they decide to loot? I mean, if you're protesting and, you know, or peaceful protesting, and why did it just got violent all of a sudden? And why did the looting happen? What is the accomplishment from that?
Okay. I'm going to explain it like this. God forbid, you know, anything that, like, not jinxing anything, but say, like, you, how do I explain it to the proper way? You ever get mad and you just, not even mad, you ever feel hurt about something or you're emotional and you're just like, or you ever rip a paper? You ever crumple up a paper after writing something down? You ever crumple up a paper?
Yeah, I mean, if I don't like something I write, yeah, I would just rip it apart and, you know, start afresh.
Over, right?
Yeah, start over.
Okay. So I look at looting like this. I look at it like, not even like, it's not as simple as crumpling up a paper, of course, like, you know, but I look at it as that frustration of, like, wanting to start over in society, wanting a new society, not even wanting a new, like, wanting justice. You know, that frustration, like, you know, I have to start all over. I have to, you know, start blank, you know. And for them, you can't win the society. We can't start over. We can't start over and go back to where we don't know where we're from, or where we can't, all of that we can't do over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to see videos and to even have, like, personal accounts of police brutality, of racism, of discrimination, all of those things, of course you get mad. And, you know, also to add on to that, why looting? There are some people that protested that did not loot. So that's one thing that the media gets misconstrued.
Yeah.
There are protesters that gathered peacefully, that gathered and sung songs, that gathered and chanted, or just really was fighting for that. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
All right, so what was I saying? I lost my train of thought. So there were some people that were protesting that did not loot. So that's when people get it misconstrued. Like, you know, when you think of the they're like, oh, it's looting, it's this. And even if they did loot, right?
Yeah.
Even if they did loot, I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying, oh, like, you know, but I will say I can understand. Like, look at all these places. Like, look at all these places in Soho, right?
Yeah.
You know, you... fashion, whatever, right? Or stores, they profit off of our dime, and they can't issue out a statement. They can't, like, you know what I'm saying? Or all of these things y'all prize and y'all put y'all pride possession in, that creates this society or this, you know, that is rooted off capitalism, whatever. But because capitalism is a whole other thing. But all of that can lead to frustration. Like, hey, if you don't respect me and you don't respect my part in society, then what can you do when all of this is gone? This is how you're going to hear me. If you can't hear me through protesting, if you can't hear, then this is how you're going to hear me then. That is the outcry of what's going on. Like, and throughout history too, like there's been shown, like there's been different ways and different paths people have taken to express their effects of oppression, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it be violent, whether it be peaceful. But either way, it was all from the root of that oppression. So why there was violence? Because not all protesters were looting. Some people just looted and it was seen as, oh, it's the protesters, because that's what the media wants to show. But also because of that frustration of that simply crumpling up that feeling of feeling powerless. So for me to take back my power, that's what I'm...
Hello?
I'm back. Sorry. I'm
open. Okay.
Okay. So yeah, that's that. It's like that crumpling of the paper and getting frustrated, you know?
Yeah. So, all right, just simply short. I know this interview has been a very...
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
But it's not as simple. Like, that's just like a metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just because, this interview has been a long time.
So bad. You have this transcript. I feel so bad.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I just simply short. I got four more questions. That just simply short. Do you think the policies for COVID was restrictive, like such as wearing masks all the time, went outside or stay home orders? Do you think it was restrictive?
No, I don't think it's restrictive because again, like it's this pandemic that's going on, millions of people are dying. So, you don't know what's going on. You don't know you don't know where it's coming. Well, you do know where it's coming from. It's a virus, but you don't know who has it. So I don't think it's restrictive. I don't think it's restrictive.
Okay. I would also say
but what I do think, I don't think it's restrictive.
Okay. So if you were to, if you were to participate in a protest, what could give you that motivation? What type of motivation, would you get, for participating?
I feel like now, right now in the current present, if there was no, because again, I feel like with the pandemic, that's the scary part, and I think for me, I'm like, that's just like scared of dying. Like, I don't want to die. Like, I don't want, but I don't want this to continue. So that's where it just stretches. But if there wasn't any pandemic and, I would protest. If there was no pandemic, I would want to protest.
Okay. Okay.
Just
all
that,
right.
That sense of being scared,
Yeah.
But sometimes in order to conquer and to make change, you have to conquer that fear. Like that's like in society, and that's a good, to go long-winded, but that's another component in society. We're scared because you wanna be in compliance. You don't wanna be shamed for being Black or being other. You wanna stay within that realm, but you have to go out of that bound, and you have to
step
out, because if you don't, then that will continue.
All right. It says, what is your overall initial thoughts and reaction of this crisis?
I know you have to learn for yourself. One of the classes, I said this before in the interview, Batista's class, the decolonization class I was in, it really, even Fine Series class, the city seminar class, for his class, it teaches you the history of everything. Like, everything has a history behind it. How we got here, how everything was built, how New York was built. All of that is a history to why we're at where we're at now,
Yeah.
But, and more in particularly, Batista's class teaches you there's that history. Now you have to deconstruct the history, Similar, even fine tooth class does that too. Like you have to deconstruct the history. And Batista's class, you know, I learned that basically after you don't be afraid, you know, from both classes, really. I could say that for both classes. Don't be afraid. You know, City Seminar teaches you the history, teaches you how to look within, look deep into it, like the history and things. And then that decon, it was like crazy how those classes both, it's kind of like a combo, like the history and then more history in that class, but also deconstructing, you know, the class, deconstructing the history, deconstructing language, deconstructing identity. So to answer your question, you know, what I have to say about this crisis is really get in tune with yourself and get in tune to who you are, what your background is, and also why things are in place. Don't take it for what it is. And
I guess you're saying kind of learn to adapt.
Learn to evolve. Learn to evolve.
That's the right word.
When you adapt, you're pretty much adapting to society. Like if I adapt, right? Of course, that's what we're taught because that's survival, right?
Yeah.
But when you evolve.
Or more like getting used to, because now with all restrictions going on, the COVID restrictions, it's affecting a lot of businesses and it's affecting a lot. It's affecting a lot. And that's something that now, because we used to go to Gutman physically, now we got to do things remotely. And this is something we got to get used to.
I agree. I totally agree with you. You know, but learning to evolve, and I say this with COVID, because you know I'm learning. You know, transferring what I want to keep in mind, scholarships, all of that. That's another part of evolving and creating the series, not letting film, my dream for film, dimmer, and also getting up even when I feel discouraged. Learning to evolve, and also to be more specific in the intricacies of our society, such as the government and police brutality and law enforcement and just things that structure our identity as well. History, learning to evolve in the sense of learning, not just taking from what I learned even at Gutman or in my prior educational career, learning from myself, learning other things outside of it and striving to learn, striving to be an athlete. So, yeah, that's what I would say about this crisis. You have to learn how to evolve.
Okay. So this is my last question. My last question to you is, do you have any message you would like to share that will inform, like, the future generation that will look back to this interview? And, you know, do you have any message to give regarding to this crisis that happened in 2020?
Well, if you're looking at this right now and you're in like 2030, right? let's say 2040.
Yeah.
How old would I be? Okay. So I would say create, learn, don't take everything at face value. Whatever you see right now is not always what it appears to be. And even like, not even that, but also learn, like really, really learn and evolve and believe. That's, and create. I don't care if you're not an artist, if you're not a film, if you're not any, always create, always leave something behind.
Yeah, do something you're passionate about.
Yes, follow your passion and don't be scared. Fear is a waste of time.
That's